Please welcome our next speaker. It's Alexander Valelkin, yes. CTO in Vitoria Metrics, and he's going to speak about working with file systems in time series database. Welcome, please.
Thank you for the introduction. Let's start. Let's meet. I'm Alexander Valelkin, as I already said, and I'm also known under my nickname Valala, which you can find Google in Google, and know more about me. I'm fond of writing high-performance code, and this code is optimized for low resource usage. And I also created a few time series databases optimized for performance and low resource usage, and these databases are, of course, open source. This is a Victoria Metrics database for metrics, and Victoria Logs database for logs. And as I said before, these databases are fast and cost efficient. And let's... They are not written in Rust. And they are written in Go. And let's talk about specifics of time series databases. These databases contain a time series data, and the time series is a series of samples, and each sample contains timestamp and value. And value can be numeric. In this case, this database contains metrics. And value can be arbitrary blob, plain text, or some structured blob. In this case, such time series named logs or events. And every time series can have arbitrary set of key value labels. And these labels are usually used for filtering and grouping, for simplifying the filtering and grouping. And the number of time series in a typical database ranges from a few thousands to billions. And the typical data ingestion rate for time series databases is up to 10 million of samples or rows per second. So you can see that such time series databases must be optimized for high data ingestion performance. And typical queries in the time series databases usually need to scan up to 10 million or 100 million of samples. So obviously you need to have high query performance. And the number of typical samples in time series databases is measured not in billions, not in millions, but in trillions. And the size of the data stored in time series databases is measured in terabytes and petabytes. So obviously, such size doesn't fit memory. And how to achieve high performance for such databases? Database performance is limited by disk I/O if the size of data doesn't fit memory, because you need to store this data, persist this data to memory. And so if you want to achieve high performance for databases, you need to reduce the number of disk operations, and you need to reduce the amounts of data read and written from disk. Let's talk about how to achieve high data ingestion rate for databases. Any ideas? Just reduce fsync frequency. Why? Let's talk about why. Because when you store data into files, this data isn't stored in files, actually. It is stored in memory, in the auth page cache by operating system. And the operating systems usually store this data into files. In background when they want to store this data. And the order of storing this data in files in disk is undefined. It doesn't match the order you write this data to files. And when you unplug your computer from the power, page cache data can be partially written to disk, and this means that you get either data loss or data corruption. So you need some system call, such as fsync, which forces storing all the data from OSP page cache, written data to OSP page cache, to disk. And that's why all the production-ready databases must use fsync. There are exceptions. Let's talk about them later. Why you need to reduce frequency? As I said before, because fsync is slow, and it is slow not only on HDDs, but on SSDs too. Why? Because when you write even a single byte to SSD disk, under the hood, SSD writes a much larger size of block, such as up to 4 megabytes or even more, which are named erase blocks, because SSDs, that's how SSD hardware works. It cannot store you one single byte on SSD. So if you, that's why expect only thousands of fsyncs per second, even on SSDs. There are exceptions, such as enterprise-grade SSDs, which are more expensive, and they have special capacitors, which allow you to store the buffered data, which is not persisted yet when you power off this SSD. But on regular SSDs, there are no such capacitors. There is database frequently use a technique which bypass OSP page cache, and they directly write data to disk via direct I/O, but it doesn't help too much because in reality this direct I/O just replaces fsync. You just simulate this fsync by yourself. So it takes the same amounts of time and resources. And also, additionally, direct I/O doesn't work well on many popular file systems. It has bugs and various issues. So how to reduce frequency for fsync at database? The first approach is to send store data in database in big batches. When you store data in big batches, the client expects the success response when this data is persisted. So per each batch, you need to issue only one fsync or multiple fsyncs. So bigger batches, smaller number of fsyncs, and you need to achieve, you can achieve a higher data ingestion performance. Another approach commonly used in databases is to merge concurrent inserts in a single data block and store it with a single fsync to disk. So, for example, you can run fsync every 10 milliseconds, 100 fsyncs per second. So every insert can be delayed up to 10 milliseconds while collecting data from concurrent inserts and then storing this data in a single insert, in a single fsync. The disadvantage of this method is that it is limited to 100 sequential inserts per second from a single client in this case. Of course, you can run thousands of concurrent clients and achieve much higher ingestion performance. Another popular approach is to use write-ahead lock. How it works, you store data, ingested data in write wall, fsync it, and after that, store this data in background in other data structures without fsync. And if a power off occurs, you can replace this wall after restart and do not lose any data. And many databases use this technique, but it doesn't reduce fsync too much because you need to make this fsync after every storage of data into wall in order to prevent from power off. And databases uses various dirty tricks for reducing FSINs at wall. For example, they can buffer data in RAM and then periodically write this data to wall with FSync, of course. Or they can write data to wall without any FSyncs and periodically run FSync on this wall. And both cases are bad because they can lead to data loss on power off. And also, they, even worse, they can lead to data corruption if power off happens in the middle of FSync. And in this case, you are unaware which parts of data are persisted and which are not persisted, and you need to protect about from this with some checksums. So there is another approach. Just admit that recently ingested data can be lost on power off. And there are practical cases when it is okay. For example, when you work with observability data, such as metrics, logs, and events. If you admit this, then you can buffer recently ingested data in memory and periodically flush it to disk with a single fsync at the end. And if the data is synced to disk, then it is safe from loss and corruption on power off. But recently ingested data can be lost on power off. And let's talk about a sense of all the databases and querying paths. They provide you abilities to quickly find the needed data by the given prefix or key. And databases use indexes for this. And indexes are data structures which map keys to locations of the data on disk in database cases. And indexes usually provide O log N C complexity, where N is the number of entries in indexes. And the most frequently used index types in databases are based on B3s. B3 is a tree data structure where every node contains thousands of entries, and nodes are usually aligned in size up to from 4 kilobytes to 64 kilobytes and stored to disk at once, every node. And when you add new entry to B3, it usually requires updating multiple nodes in this tree along the path where you add this node. And node entries usually can, B3 entries contain not the data, raw data itself, but pointers to the data. And this data is stored somewhere else in other files. Another popular index type is based on LSM trees. These trees, this data structure contains of files. Every file contains data sorted, just sorted data, and such files periodically merge in bigger files in background. And this means that these files usually always contain entries, sorted entries, and they contain some values itself instead of pointers to values which are stored somewhere else. And let's look at some practical cases. The first case is high data ingestion rate. When you use B3, then you need to update B3 nodes, multiple B3 nodes per each data ingested entry. This means that in worst case, you need to make multiple FSyncs per each ingested entry. And also, since when you use B3, you are relying on wall, and you need additional disk bandwidth for wall. And when you use LSM trees, then you just buffer multiple entries, thousands of entries in memory, and then store them in disk in one FSync. And you do not need any wall and save disk I/O. The second case is reading values in the index order, which is frequently used. In B3 case, you need to read data from many different locations on disk because in B3 doesn't contain usually rows, as I said, raw data. It contains pointers to the data, and this data can be scattered across the disk. And in LSM trees, as you remember, the data itself is stored in order, ordered, and this means that you just read this data sequentially with a much smaller number of disk operations. The next practical case is ingesting big data volumes which do not fit memory. In B3 case, this increases significantly the amounts of disk operations because if some B3 nodes are missing in memory, then this means that you need to read them in memory. And if you have no enough space for all the B3 nodes, then you need to evict some these B3 nodes and store them to disk. So you increase significantly disk write operations and read operations. And in LSM tree, the frequency of disk write read operations doesn't depend on the size of database. Another case is snapshots. In B3 case, you need some complicated schemes based on MVCC and transaction IDs, and which need a lot of time and efforts. And in LSM trees, snapshots are instant for any database sizes. Why? Because LSM tree files are immutable, and this means that you just make hard links for all the LSM files and get snapshot, and it is instant for any size of data. Another case is network-attached storages, such as NFS or object storage. In B3 case, it doesn't work at all because you need to update files, and object storage and network file systems are bad for updating files. And in LSM, it works perfectly because files are immutable. You just write these files and then delete already merged files and do not update them any time. As for disk space usage, in B3 index isn't compressible usually, and row values are compressed not so well because the order of these values are pretty random, and this means bigger disk space usage. And in LSM trees, data is compressed much better because it's sorted, and sorted data compressed better, and you get lower disk space usage. And of course, you get lower disk read bandwidth in LSM trees compared to B3, and this means higher query performance for queries which need to read terabytes of data, because you need small amounts of data, unpack them, and then process. Let's talk about row-oriented with column-oriented storage. Row-oriented storage, you store rows on disk one after the other. It works great for select star type of queries, when you select all the row fields, but such queries are not usually used in practice. And row-oriented storage has very big overhead for typical production queries, which select some subset of fields and perform some filtering on subset of fields. This results in low compression ratio. As for column storage, you store data per each column separately in separate files, and this gives you big overhead for select star queries, but they are not used frequently in production, but it has much smaller overhead for the, production queries because it reads data only for the given columns which are mentioned in select and where, and it doesn't need to read other data. And per column data compresses much better than per row data, because per column data values usually contain some constants or small number of unique values, and this means that you get faster performance and less disk space. Let's skip this because I have no time, and let's go to the conclusions. The first conclusion is fsync is slow, and the best way to reduce fsync rate is to admit that the recently ingested data can be lost. This doesn't apply for typical OLAP OLTP databases such as MySQL and Postgres, but it applies well for time series databases, typical time series databases, which store metrics, logs, and events. Just admit it. And LSM trees use disk less disk I/O than B3s, and column-oriented storage uses less disk space and disk I/O than row-oriented storage, even if you include background merges overhead. And when you combine LSM trees with column-oriented storage, you get the best performance for big databases which do not fit memory. There are these popular databases which use LSM trees and column-oriented storage. ClickHouse, of course. DuckDB, and of course, Victoria Metrics and Victoria Logs. And I recommend you investigating the source code for these databases because they are all open source. And that's it. Thank you.